Are you interested in a life in ministry?
Are you passionate about the church and how it functions?
Do you not get enough of listening to pastors on Sundays? Well, you're in the right place. This is Under the Fig Tree, a podcast for people who are interested in church work. I'm Ben.
And I'm Micah. We are two pastors who work at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis. Join us as we dive into the vocation of pastoral ministry, dig into scripture, and occasionally talk about other stuff, like our unquestionable love for the Dallas Cowboys.
And of course, we'll be talking about Star Wars. We'll talk to guests about doctrine, traditions, and what makes someone a good candidate for the pastoral office, besides being called by God. And we may just help you figure out if this pastor or deaconess stuff is for you.
Again, this is Under the Fig Tree from Concordia Seminary in St. Louis. What's up? And welcome back once again to another episode of Under the Fig Tree. I am Reverend Micah Glenn, the Director of Recruitment here at Concordia Seminary St. Louis. And of course, I'm joined with my co-host, the Reverend Dr. Ben Haupt. Ben, what is going on in Hauptland these days?
What is going on in Hauptland these days? Yeah, we're just having a lot of fun as a family. It's a beautiful day. The weather's starting to turn nice. We're beginning to see the glimpses of beautiful weather, so we're enjoying that.
Little buds on trees.
Yeah. We like to be out a little bit, but of course, we're still playing plenty of Minecraft. We're still playing. Lately, it's been Super Mario 3D World. That's a fun game for the four of us to dive into, and we replay levels and replay levels and replay levels. You got to get that last green star, right? So how are things in the Glenn household?
Those green stars. One day we'll have my son Johnny on here. It'll be a strictly Minecraft episode, and he'll be able to tell you everything about it. Things are good. The other day I was at a Walgreens with Johnny picking up a prescription, and we're on our way out, and he pauses and freezes and looks at something. I'm like, here we go. You know, that good old question, can I have this? And it was kites. So he picked out a kite for him, for his sister and his little brother. It's like one of those things where it's like, oh, can we have kites? I want to fly a kite. And it's like one of those things like, yeah, we can do that. Luckily, I didn't even look at the price, but luckily they were only $4 a piece. So you know, you break the bank buying them. But you never know. Like,
it's going to get hung up in a tree in like the first 30 minutes. So, you know, as long as it's only $4, you can kind of not be too mad once he gets it hung up in the tree. Right. Well, that's how kite flying goes in my house, at least.
Well, so we took them to the field, you know, in our backyards. And, you know, you just, when they get close to the trees, you just call them back, and they've been pretty good. Not too windy, but windy enough to get them to the end of the string and for them to enjoy that. So it's, you know, it's one like those simple things, seeing your kids enjoy putting a kite in the air and the wonder of it all, and pretending like they're fishing for things in the sky, using those little imaginations. So yeah, our kids are still at the age I'm trying to enjoy every last moment of childlike innocence. I feel it tipping the other way.
Right. It comes very quickly. I mean, our oldest is a teenager getting ready for high school next year. So the relationship continues to grow and change and evolve. So lately he and I are watching Stranger Things again. I was a huge fan of that show when it first launched, and I pretty much binged every episode that Stranger Things have put out as soon as they put it out. But you know, I'm a sci-fi nerd, yeah. So they're picking up on all kinds of Star Wars lore and storylines and stuff.
Everything.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. It's,
well, and season
it's
four.
ET, 80s childhood.
Yeah. Season four is due this year, right? Hopefully.
Yeah.
Fingers crossed. Yeah.
No. So we're ready. We're getting ready for that. Getting kind of reviewing all of those. So it's his first time through. It's a ton of fun watching a show like that together.
Yeah. Well, before we get too deep into the weeds of what's going on in our own households, we have a very special guest, somebody who I admire very much. She works closely with me. She's on a team of student recruitment ambassadors, a new recruiting initiative that we've started this past year. She's a deaconess, and she's here locally in St. Louis. Deaconess Christina Paul. I feel like I began to introduce you, and I should have stopped myself and let you say a little bit more. But please tell us who you are and how you're called to the church.
Sure. Well, first of all, thank you so much for having me. This is a pretty fun experience. This is my very first podcast, so this is all new unexplored territory. And I feel like, I mean, I kind of started with a high bar here.
It's not that high. We're glad you see it that way.
Again, just remember, this is all the experience I have. So let's see, where I'm called. Those are your questions, kind of.
Yeah, who you are. When somebody says, who is Christina Paul, what's your answer?
Tall is usually the first thing that comes to mind. But yes, sure. Vocationally speaking, first of all, I am a wife to Nate Paul. He actually works at Concordia Publishing House, not a pastor, which is somewhat strange in the deaconess world. But yeah, and he's fantastic. I remember when I was growing up, you know, you think about who you might marry, and I remember praying to God about it, you know, like, you know, dear Lord, you know, please, you know, help him to love you. And, you know, if he could, you know, be smart and all these things, and if he could also be tall, just this little, I'm like, I know it's kind of silly, but, and God totally answered that prayer. He's 6'6". It's fantastic. So huge fan.
It's nice. It's okay to be short as well, by the way, guys, if you're not very tall.
Is fantastic.
Yeah. There's somebody for you. Yeah. Yeah. Just not Christina.
But yeah, together we have three kids, Jackson, who's 8 in second grade, Claire, who's 5. And she's in her last year of preschool. She actually just signed her kindergarten letter of intent. So we're just looking forward to that for her. And Oliver, or Ollie, our youngest, who was a bit of a surprise, but he is the ham of our family, and he's 3 years old. He's finishing up potty training, which is
fun times.
So much fun.
Been there, done that.
I tell parents of young kids that it gets better because those were hard years for us.
Yeah.
And wow. Yeah.
I know. We were trying to, like, newborn nights or potty training. Like, which one would you take? And there are moments I'm like, I'll take those newborn nights, right? Because I'm not cleaning up.
Right.
The poop is different. We use the beginning of COVID to potty train our youngest. It was brutal. He was very, very comfortable using the toilet in his underwear. It was painful. So I feel you. God bless you.
I'll have to admit that we actually started last year too. It has just taken that long.
It happens.
We'll get there. We'll get there.
Yeah.
Well, that's kind of our family in a nutshell.
What Christina didn't say, that she was a Division I hooper. I'm not gonna let that slide at Drake University.
Like, has been. We are so in
big time. Big time, yeah. Everybody. Division I hooper. But as mentioned, you're also a deaconess. So where are you called, and what does that call pertain?
Yeah, I am called to Salem Lutheran Church and School in Afton, Missouri, kind of that southern part of St. Louis. It's right on the boundary of St. Louis City and St. Louis County, and so it's kind of an interesting demographic there. Still very much South St. Louis in terms of overall demographics, but we get an interesting mix of people. So I am called to be our director of women's ministries. And so that's, you know, pretty broad from Bible studies to kind of more intentional counseling relationships to book clubs, and even just we've done some fitness ventures together, like group walks and doing some half marathon training together, kind of more in my earlier years here. But then also kind of the other large part of what I do is I am the director of our congregational care ministries. So that really has to do with ministry to our homebound folks and those who are maybe sick or hospitalized or even grieving and going through some of those rough transitions. So, those are kind of the two biggest thrusts of what I do. In addition to that, I teach our seventh grade religion class. And I know I remember back in seminary when we were doing our pastor as educator class. I don't know if they still have that. Do they still do that as a class?
It's changed a little bit, but it's still there's still a teaching class. Yeah.
Yeah, I remember we were going out to do our student teaching, and everybody like was like, "Oh, please don't give me the seventh graders. Like, I'm not ready for that." And I was like, "I'll take the seventh graders. I love them. You know."
Yeah.
And that's
God bless you. See, pastors, this is why you need a deaconess.
I love it. Like, they're right on that, like, that edge of, you know, they're still kids and still, like, need some of that, like, encouragement and that kind of teacher relationship. But their brains are growing, and so they start making these really cool connections. And it's kind of just that tipping point where you can start going into some kind of deeper themes and kind of unveiling those, and that's kind of fun.
I yeah, I'm with you. I love teaching middle school, right from like 10 to like maybe 14 is like my sweet spot. Once they get into high school, they're just know-it-alls and they're annoying. But but yeah, the middle school years, they're great.
They are. They're so much fun. Yeah, for sure. And then what else? I guess I get to do some visioning as needed, and kind of the Jill of all trades, right? Kind of point and shoot. Oh, and I'm part-time. So there you go.
Wow. That's a lot of part-time work.
The hours are full. We'll say that. Very. Yeah. Overall, I love it. It's, you know, it's one of those things if you would have asked me growing up, you know, what do you want to be when you grow up? A deaconess would have never been even in my wheelhouse to consider, but, God had some pretty cool plans in mind for sure.
Yeah, well, deaconess, of course, is one of our auxiliary offices in the church, along with teacher, DCE, and these other ones. But a very valuable one, as hopefully people could see in the illustration of the list of things you do. And for me, it's always that, because my wife Dorothy is a deaconess, and it's always that ministry to women, where most of us, as in us pastors, we're usually not that great at that, you know, that whole, you know, men are from Mars or women are from Venus. Not quite sure which way it goes. Maybe I said it backwards. It's kind of true. You know, I've been married for going on 9 years. I had to think a little bit about the number. I know the day, but anyway.
We might have to edit that out.
No. I won't tell Dorothy if you don't.
Listen, nothing. She won't be surprised. It's June 1st. It's a very easy day. I never forget
there
the day.
There you go.
But yeah, and I have three sisters, but then, you know, every time there's a woman in need who needs pastoral counseling, I'm usually like, you know what? I have this wife, and she's really good at this kind of stuff. Do you mind if I refer you to her? And Dorothy, being the lovely deaconess that she is, like most deaconesses, welcome that with open arms. But of course, this office of deaconess didn't just come out of the blue willy-nilly. Women in scripture usually play an extremely vital role, all the way back to Deborah, the judge of Israel. There's one in particular. Her name is Phoebe. She's mentioned one time. And Dr. Haupt, if you don't mind, can you read that passage in Romans 16 for us?
Yeah, so Romans 16, I love this chapter because, Paul has spent most of the book of Romans laying out this really important theology of justification by faith alone and grace and the peace that we have because of our justification and what does this mean for Jews and Gentiles in the church. And then he gets to this final chapter, and Paul lists off all these people, and a lot of times there aren't very many Bible studies that deal with Romans 16, but I think it's tremendously important. So let me read Romans 16 verses 1 and 2. Paul says, "I commend to you our sister Phoebe, a servant of the church at Cenchreae, that you may welcome her in the Lord in a way worthy of the saints, and help her in whatever way she may need from you. For she has been a patron of many and of myself as well." So Phoebe is a co-worker with Paul, and he's holding her up. He mentions her by name, much in the way that, Jesus says about the woman that anoints him right before Holy Week, that all the Gospels will tell this woman's story because of what she did. So in much the same way, Paul kind of puts Phoebe out in front of us so that the church never forgets that it wasn't just a Paul and a Peter, but Phoebe also played a tremendously important role in the beginnings of the church as a servant of the church, as Paul says. So interested to Christina, you had lots of courses in Bible, and we'll talk maybe a little bit about coursework for deaconesses in a little bit, but what are your thoughts on Phoebe in particular, or just the office of deaconess from the New Testament?
Sure. For one, I'll back up a little bit. As growing up, I remember my Bible. It had this little denim cover, and like my mom had like stitched a heart with a little cross. It was like very, very girly, very, very like late 80s looking, but I remember, as a girl, reading through the Bible and just loving the stories about girls, about women, from Esther and Ruth, like going back and forth to those. And, that was even really before I would have, before high school, any of that kind of male, female dynamic stuff. But as girls, as young women, it's a beautiful thing to find these stories of women in the Bible. Of course, there are obviously women who like mess up in very large ways, but also all of these stories of how God uses these women in either broken situations or precarious situations and accomplishes his mission of in Old Testament, I'm carrying that promise forward. But then in New Testament, carrying the news of the fulfilled promise out into the world too. And, with Phoebe really forming that framework of support for the apostles who were doing that great work. So I would say prior to getting to seminary, I probably would have known of Phoebe. But not in the more intimate and dear way that I would have identified with her going through my seminary years too, which was fun. This is probably a good time to admit that I didn't really have a good idea of what a deaconess was until well into my first, maybe even second quarter at the SEM. So there is that. It was a working definition for a while too.
Yeah, that word deaconess, I was just looking up in the Greek, the word for servant, Phoebe, who is a servant of the church, that word is diakonon, where we get our word deaconess. So straight from Romans 16:1, Phoebe is a deaconess. She is, and what that diakonon means is a servant, one who serves. In Acts 6, which we've talked about on this podcast already, Acts 6, the church calls some men into the office of deacon to serve tables and make sure that everybody's getting what they need in the church, in much the same way then women are also called into this role of serving as a deaconess. And that's what Phoebe was doing. So we don't know exactly, I guess, all that Phoebe was doing to serve the church, except we know that she was evidently bankrolling Paul's ministry, right? So
and not maybe, just him, right? Not just him.
Others. Right, right. So maybe Phoebe was a powerful businesswoman and had some cash at her disposal. We do know that the other women that Jesus has with them, they're also in this role of patron or supporting role essentially bankrolling Jesus and the disciples as they're wandering around doing ministry. So pretty important stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. It's really cool to see, you know, even as we talk about Phoebe, how she's it's a little byline, but obviously it's this role that allows the gospel to move forward without that partnership. There could have been a stop, but there wasn't. By God's provision, this relationship, her heart for the mission, this really happens too. What you said about her being a businesswoman, I have to laugh because when I was in seminary, we had a little foray into marketing because, you know, again, deaconesses, maybe what they do, maybe aren't as well known, right? And definitely even, you know, 10, 11 years ago, not as well known either. And so we're like, well, we're going to really help inform others about what deaconesses are and what they can do. And so we put our little marketing caps on and we had these pins made and they said now serving. And so we're like, oh, that's so cute. Like, you know, look at us. And then like, come to find out, it kind of just looked like we were like restaurant help, but you know, the intent was there, but yeah. So
that's awesome. It's all about serving in the church. And, right. And I think that's the key. Micah, I know you mentioned before we got on this podcast that you knew of a book about Phoebe. Tell us a little bit about that.
Let's be honest. I should be able to tell you a lot about that book. My mother-in-law wrote it.
Oh, all right.
It is called In the Footsteps of Phoebe. And if I look around my library hard enough, I would find it. But I'm going to toss the question to Christina, because not because I don't find value in the book. I have cracked it open and I've read stories about it. And again, I'm married to a deaconess. Like I just said, my mother-in-law is a deaconess. I'm quite often at the Concordia Deaconess Conference, mostly as a babysitter to my three children, but nonetheless, I know CDC, the Concordia Deaconess Conference, not the Center for Disease Control, although the talent for that would be there. All to say that, you know, I know deaconesses there's a wide array of what they accomplish. My wife, Dorothy, she's currently called to a congregation and serves as their admissions director and director for communications. I know another local deaconess that is the director of a early center. I know a deaconess who does prison ministry. I know a deaconess that works at one of the Concordias. And so the breadth of what they can do, I think, is really empowered by the job and the variety of the women that we see in the New Testament in particular, these women like Phoebe. So all that to say, Christina, I've kind of like hinted at some of the things that deaconesses do for the church. If you could define, and if we went to like the Concordia Deaconess Conference page, I think there's a formal definition. I'm not going to put you on the spot and say recite what a deaconess is, unless you know. But if you could, yeah. If you could just kind of like give us, what is a deaconess? Because, you know, people will say like, oh, we're like Lutheran nuns, but that's not true. So what is a deaconess? I kind of sidestepped your question about In the Footsteps of Phoebe, Ben, and I think I did it pretty well.
Yeah,
but so what is a deaconess?
Sure. I think the conversational way that I define it when people ask too, it's a woman, right, who uses this theological framework and toolbox that she's been trained in. To then go out and serve, right? And because the way Concordia Seminary equips us, because again, they give us this toolbox model, this framework model, instead of, you know, here's the answers and memorize them, by giving us the tool to think and to pray and to consider from this beautiful Lutheran standpoint, then we can take that out into so many situations, across cultures, across even areas of business too, different areas of service. We have, again, deaconesses who take that, again, that framework, that theology training they have, and they apply it to publishing, right? Or they apply it to and producing quality Bible study material. Like you hinted at too, a prison ministry, Deaconess Sandy participating in that, ministering to those women who are incarcerated, who still desperately need the gospel. But I mean, that's a pretty powerful thing. We have deaconesses who, of course, work in parishes too, like myself, but we have deaconesses who are trained to work with the Comfort Dog Ministry and really use those, the wonderful way that dogs do to create inroads into relationships, and they use that in nursing homes to further their ministry too. We have deaconesses in leadership positions in the Synod too, helping to craft those kind of important decisions for a greater ministry across our Synod. So yeah, that's the really fun part about what a deaconess can be, is that it's kind of that Jill of all trades. You take the theology training she has, maybe that special equipping that God has given her, and maybe a passion for a subset of people. Is that older adults? Is that kids? Is it veterans? Is it, prisoners? Whatever that is. And God combines all of that into these amazing ministry opportunities.
Yeah. If you've ever seen Engage Magazine, that's put together by Deaconess Pam Nielsen, another deaconess that I really admire. A lot of gifts and a lot of talent across the board. And so kind of to piggyback on some of the things you say, when I asked Dorothy, I'm like, okay, for like the umpteenth millionth time, define deaconess for me. And so, again, she has a very formal way of saying it, but of course, that's just my wife, Dorothy. But it's a woman who uses her gifts and her theological training to perform works of mercy, to hopefully point people to the office of pastor, where they can receive word and sacrament ministry. How apt of a definition would you say that is?
Well, of course, I'm going to give Dorothy an A+.
Okay.
Yeah, for sure.
Her words would have been much more eloquent than mine.
I can hear it. Yeah, I can hear it.
Well, and she has like a British accent, so it always sounds better.
Of course, yeah. She like automatically they sound more educated. Automatically, for sure. Yeah, that's a really important thing too. That hand in hand ministry with the pastoral office. I think we alluded to this maybe earlier before coming on too, but that male female dynamic of church work. It's present, and it's so important to minister to the women in our communities too, in our churches. And pastors do that so well. They do. And in many various ways and different life situations, they do. But it is also nice. in certain life issues, in certain life situations, to have a female present. It's a different kind of comfort. It's a different kind of perspective. And with that, it just becomes a more full spectrum of caring for the people who are in a pastor's flock. So,
Christina, you were talking, and Micah, you mentioned this too, about the training of a deaconess. And Christina, I like the way that you put it. You said that you called it like a toolbox. So seminary, you feel like seminary gave you a toolbox of tools to use. So would you tell us a little bit about what kind of classes do deaconesses take, and what was your experience going through the curriculum? What courses did you take? Any courses with people that were men that were studying to be pastors, like in the MDiv program, or is it all separate? Of course, I know some answers to those questions, but I want to hear the answers from you.
Yeah, sure. So My seminary experience was kind of two permutations previous to what currently the women go through. So I think that was a more time of transition for the deaconess program, in terms of there was still a lot of trying to figure out and wrestle with what good deaconess formation looked like, kind of as parallel but also distinct from pastoral ministry. But even with that, the quality of the theological education at the SEM, it was just fantastic. So that's not to say it was not without difficulty in terms of wrestling a lot too. But I mean, we took, exegetical classes in terms of kind of pointed us how to be able to write Bible studies. That was kind of the point there, kind of in our kind of normal time, the kind of the 2 years we have on campus, it's not possible for us to go deep into languages too. So those were the English versions of that. But you know, we took what was once called the Lutheran Mind. I think that exists as a slightly different class now.
For everybody's benefit.
Yeah. But that was good. That was probably, first quarter. We're in the big auditorium, in with pretty much our whole class, and we're all slugging through that together.
And for our listeners who probably don't know what the Lutheran Mind is, tell us a little bit about what was covered in that course.
Yeah, an introduction to kind of basic Lutheran theology, kind of theology of a cross opposed to theology of glory, which I think for both myself and a number of my immediate cohort, like that was quite a bit of a shock to realize, like, maybe we've been living under the theology of glory for a little while here, and like kind of really shifting that. And I think poor Dr. Okamoto, he had to deal with the deaconess troop one time, like gathering after class and being like, we don't understand. I think one of my classmates was like in tears, this is the benefit of having females in the classroom.
You weren't the only ones who didn't understand that class.
I went to my professor after the theology of cross lecture too, and was like, but what about this? And what about that? Don't good works matter? And so there is something really profoundly shaping in taking a course that really, we all come to the seminary as Christians, right? And we all have a faith in Jesus, but sometimes we haven't thought real deeply about what does it mean to follow Jesus. And Lutheran Mind, I know, really shapes people to think very deeply about the whole human experience, Christian experience, and what it means to follow Jesus. So yeah, powerful stuff.
So then that particular class, that's the kind of the first glimmers, like you said, for the Christian experience, that's really the start of our kind of honing this craft of ministering to people when they are hurting and when they're questioning, when they're grieving or feeling betrayed. These are the situations that deaconesses find themselves. Many pastors, of course, too, often more in a broad aspect, but for deaconesses, a lot of our ministry is one-to-one, and so we get this kind of intimate look at kind of these crises that, a life of faith can have in one person. And so having that Lutheran mind, understanding, okay, that kind of work dynamic, that guilt dynamic, all of that, where that comes from, and then kind of helping that person walk through that. I mean, that's an incredible tool to have, as opposed to like, I don't know, that just stinks, And so like empathy is wonderful, but being able to point them to the cross, it's a beautiful thing.
Just about every deaconess I know is a master of Walther's Law and Gospel. Most often to the thesis and how it applies. I'm always the theology, and that was one thing I always appreciated from having classes with deaconesses, being close to deaconesses, having friends that are deaconesses, and spending so much time, is that theological conversation from two slightly different perspectives, that we're all Lutheran, we're all doctrinally the same, except again, just the difference between male and female, that approaches ever so slightly. And there's just this appreciation when I'm talking to Dorothy or my mother-in-law or even you, Christina, or other deaconesses I know, and we're talking about a situation in scripture and our theology, and it's like, man, yeah, the way you just said it, I might have gotten there, but the amount of time that it would have taken me to get there, you know, probably would have been like 40 years from now. So I always appreciate the fact that, like, yeah, exactly, when deaconesses come to the seminary, the education is very much the same. Maybe languages. I know some deaconesses, they'll do Hebrew or Greek or both in undergraduate if they desire. But it's not a lesser theology at all.
Yeah, I again, you know, the density of that time on campus. I mean, it's a crucible, kind of in a really good way. It's, again, not always without struggle. But, you know, being on campus, being at the feet of these professors, right, who are sharing their wisdom too. And I have to stop there because that phrase is not original to me. I don't know if we have time for this. Can I tell a brief story?
Yeah, sure, of course.
Okay. So when I was considering what to do next, after college, I was a youth worker. I'd been a social worker. Kind of as a social worker, and if you have your BS in psychology, that means basically you need to get another degree to do anything. So I was looking at the MSW program, and my dad said, you know, while you're down there in St. Louis looking at WashU, you know, the seminary is right there. Why don't you just go check it out? They've got this deaconess program. Right. And so I had two tours that day. You know, obviously it's WashU and it was, you know, very well done, and sitting on a class, I mean, professor, it was very nice. The seminary one was also good, but again, it was a transition period. And so it was just a little bit more glued together. and now it's much different, a different ball game. I think if we had the time, I'd be like, I'll take advantage of that tuition benefit and I'll go back and do the whole thing again, right? But I remember they had given us some tickets to come eat back in, I think Coburg was still in existence. And so we came back, and I remember at that point, I was pretty sure I was going to go to WashU and get my MSW. Like, it's pretty sure, right? But we came back and we were sitting, you know, eating at those big long tables they used to have. And some pastoral students came up and they're like, hey, you're continuing the deaconess program. That's great. There's a deaconess student right behind you. And I was like, oh, okay. And it was Elizabeth Allman. And she's fantastic. She's a deaconess. And she was like mid chewing, right? Like still had stuff in her cheek. But she turned around and she's like, sure, you know, like let's chat for a bit. And in sum, she basically said, you know, it may not be the easiest road, but at the end of the day, you get to sit at the feet of some of the greatest theological minds in the world today. And I remember at that time, like, that's where God was pointing me to be. I had big questions about my faith, big questions about how to even pursue those answers, right? And it was just that next kind of clicking into place, you know, where I should go next. And that's really what it turned out to be. You know, learning out how to, learn about how to ask the questions and then pursue those questions in a godly and Lutheran godly way.
That's awesome. That was my experience too, coming to seminary. I just had tons of questions about God, tons of questions about, I had no idea how to really share my faith in deep or structured ways. I mean, one-off little comments and that sort of thing. But I just had so many questions, and I would imagine that our listeners listening are trying to answer some of those questions just by listening to this podcast. So that's fantastic.
Well, I think this conversation could probably go on for another 45 minutes easily. But Deaconess Paul, thank you so much for joining us. I think what you've offered us today is just the, I think the tip of an iceberg again of what a deaconess and who a deaconess is and what they do for the church. Again, and as a husband of a deaconess, I know that the talents and the contributions go deep and wide, but we'll have to save some of that for another episode featuring a deaconess once again. But thank you all for tuning again. And again, this has been another episode of Under the Fig Tree. Thanks for joining us for another episode of Under the Fig Tree. Throughout the Gospels, Jesus shows his followers how to care for his people. Oftentimes, this includes sharing the word in intimate moments of personal conversation like the Samaritan woman at the well. At other times, it's sharing the word with crowds, like the Sermon on the Mount. Sometimes, it's just being there for people when they are experiencing the worst moments of life, like when Jesus was there for Jairus when his daughter died.
It's gathering his disciples around a table of bread and wine to hear, "This is my body. This is my blood." Whether it's as a deaconess, sharing the word with the sick, or as a pastor preaching the word and administering the sacraments, being there for people at these intimate moments in life is something that Jesus is calling many more people to do. In Under the Fig Tree, we want to bring you into these moments with us, and maybe you begin to see yourself in one of these roles or feel yourself being called into service of the church. If you want to find out more about what it means to be a pastor or deaconess, visit us at csl.edu. And of course, keep listening to Under the Fig Tree.